So what I'm supposed to do is give you a kind of a very concentrated version of Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. All right. Oh, okay. And as I understand, to comply with, we have the topic responding to the call of our inner intelligence, way to freedom. Bhagavad Gita is somehow presented, especially in our modern times, to be a textbook of or Bible of three different paths of yoga: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. Whereas, when you look at the end of each chapter, it tells you more precisely what kind of subject had been the focal point of that particular chapter. So first chapter, for example, is very bizarre kind of yoga, which I don't think that you have ever heard unless you have read the Bhagavad Gita, not the modern versions of translation of Bhagavad Gita. But here, I'll tell you, the name of, quote, yoga described in chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita is called Vishada Yoga. Vishada means grief, sorrow, pain, you know, sadness, despondency, sinking into inertia. Then we wonder, is it really yoga? But the truth is, if we do not pay attention to some of those unavoidable situations and circumstances in life, then such unavoidable circumstances and situations will lead us to a place where there is nothing like yoga left in life. So on one hand, certain conditions in life, they seem to be unavoidable. They must come. And yet, if we are wise, if we are accompanied by, or if we embrace our very best friend in us, that is Buddhi, the power of discernment which is innate to all of us, then it is preventable. Or at least it can be modified. Or at least its binding effect can be minimized. From that standpoint, the content that is introduced in chapter 1 of the Bhagavad Gita is called Vishada Yoga. The concepts or the doctrines wisdom that is shared in chapter 1 can help us rise above Vishada, sadness, grief, sorrow. That's why it's Vishada Yoga. So in chapter 1, the story of Bhagavad Gita begins with a war between two brothers, cousin brothers. Both of them are claiming for their right over the kingdom. Both of them have their logic and reason to justify their fight. Both of them have their supporters. An amazing thing is the party here, which finally loses the battle, becomes defeated, has gathered, garnered much bigger support than the one who ultimately is proven to be on the right side. So this is what is happening here. There are 18, although it's very difficult to say what it means, 18 million, although the way it is said, you know, it's much, 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 much bigger. But the entire army, total army to, of the both sides combined, it's, let's say, 18 million. And out of that, the right side has only 6 million, and the so-called wrong side has 12 million. There are times in life when we are caught in such an imbalanced situations and circumstance where the negative forces, destructive forces are putting an enormous pressure on us to comply with the negative and destructive forces. Of course, if we do so, outcome will be very negative and destructive. And if we are lucky, then one third of circumstances are supporting us to take right action. So we are left here with someone to face, confront, and conquer, who is twice stronger than we are. And we must do it. What here this Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 is telling, which is the subject matter of our today's discussion, the Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, verse 48, is it? 49 through 51, 52. That we must take action. Whereas the popular belief is, that the actions always lead to bondage. And where this concept comes from, that actions lead to bondage? Well, they come from a confused state of mind where too many sentiments get totally mingled and we do not know the true spirit, true essence of those intermingled sentiments, feelings, doctrines, viewpoints. So here is an example. In chapter 1, the circumstances are that two brothers, cousin brothers, are standing in the battlefield. On one side, there are five brothers from one father. One father, and he had two wives. With one wife, he had three children, and with another wife, he had two children. So these five brothers are one side. Then there is an uncle who had 100 children. Now, those 100 brothers and their side of the army, fully determined, they don't care to have love, compassion, kindness, friendliness, you know, consideration for others. whereas other side, I'm wondering what will be the consequence of this battle. What am I going to gain out of it? On top of that, after all, they are my cousin brothers. My teacher is standing against me in the, is on the other, in the opposite camp. My uncles are there. My grandfather is also standing against us. And worst comes to the leader of this five people's army, the other side. He's looking at what will happen when so much of our young generation will be wiped out at this moment. People are drunk with the opium of war. War is just like another opium. I can't fight this war. This thought became so intense that Arjuna acknowledges, and he tells his own chariot driver, the wise man Krishna, "O Krishna, my lips are drying up, my limbs are shaking, my heartbeat has accelerated, and my bow is falling from my hand." Then that is when Krishna says something very beautiful. Kutastva kashamalamidam vishami samupasthitam anaryam ajustam aswargyam akirtikaram Arjuna. This is a very good thought. This is a very good thing in normal circumstance. This is what we are supposed to do when we are trying to make a decision, when we are caught in the battle of life, when we are seeing so many currents and cross currents are colliding among each other. We are just completely caught in it. And no matter which way we go, it's going to be painful. At that time, we have to summon our patience. We have to summon our wisdom. We have to stand firm and not rush in making a decision right away. We have to give time to ourselves. Okay. But there comes a time when the decision has already been made. Now here we are in the middle of battlefield. While we are in the middle of battlefield, it's no longer the right time to talk about, what will happen. It's already, that time has passed. It is time to implement the next best option. The best option is, of course, to resolve the issue through a peaceful means, through dialogue. In our personal life, when this situation emerges, then the best option is to resolve this problem through inner dialogue, internal dialogue, where we allow ourselves to look at each and every issue from equal vantage point. Okay? That's what Arjuna had asked right in the very beginning. O Krishna, please drive my chariot and take me to the center of the battlefield from where I can see both armies and everybody involved in the war from equal distance. War is now inevitable. It cannot be stopped. But I want to make sure that during the fight, I do not lose my perspective. So please take me to the center of the battlefield. This law applies in our personal life too. When all the right and wrong, positive and constructive, good and bad forces are colliding or just about to collide, when the loss and gain, honor and insult, birth, you know, the life and death is completely commingled, when our friends, when we have difficult time just determining what makes a friend friend and what makes enemy enemy, when the forces of animosity and friendship in themselves have become completely confused, at that time we have to go inside and take a fresh look, however, while keeping an equal distance from the right and wrong and good and bad and loss and gain, honor and insult, success and failure, then we'll be able to make a right decision. You have to have a calm and tranquil mind. You have to have patience. You have to have power of discernment. And you have to have the determination, unshakable determination, that finally when you made the decision is made and it cannot be altered. Because altering the decision in the middle of its execution will have far more destructive consequences than had you implemented that kind of ideology before you entered the battlefield. So is the case in our personal life. That is when you have to be really strong. Don't be timid and don't be shy. That's what Krishna is coming here with. Very powerful statement when Arjuna said, please Krishna, I cannot fight. I cannot fight. Arjuna, Klaibhyam Masma Gamah Partha, very, very, in our today's modern context, the word Krishna is using is a very, very, what you call, inappropriate even term. That's very, very inappropriate term in our modern, language. 21st century. He's saying, Klaibhyam Masma Gamah Partha. Don't resort to impotency, Arjuna. No. Kutastva kashamalmidam. What is this nonsense? This kind of impurity, this kind of toxic, impure thought flashing in such an inappropriate time. Bishami, in this, at the time when the whole world is counting on your actions, when the justice itself is begging, some support, when the truth itself seems to be taking its last breath, when the higher principles of love, compassion, and kindness is praying for the cosmos to come forward and resuscitate them. And it is at that time you are changing your mind. It is anaryam. This is not an action of a respectful person. This is not a behavior of anyone who is honorable. This is not honorable behavior. Anaryam, ajustam. This is not desirable at all. Aswargyam. This will kill your own conscience and you will not be able to face yourself, and thus you will hide yourself in the, you know, the deepest bottom of hell in your own mind. You will not be able to lift your head straight. Akirtikaram. And as long as you are going to be, as long as you are alive, you will face continuous criticism, because no one will come to know the truth. Truth will be written in its distorted fashion, and that's what will go into history, and people will exactly know what is being told by others, not by the truth itself, not by you. Whole life, you will carry the rotten corpse of your own life on the shoulders of your own soul, and while you are taking your last breath, you will not be able to face your own conscience, and thus you will volunteer to stay in hell forever. Wow, that is, no? Kutastva kashamalamidam visame samupasthitam anarima justyam swargam akirtikaram Arjuna. Then, next verse he says there, next passage. Klaibhyam masma gamah partha. Therefore I tell you, Arjuna, don't, you know, throw yourself, don't drown yourself in this self-created impotency. Kraibhya masma gamah partha etattvai nahi upadyate. But rather, tyaktva hriday daurvalyam. Don't think that this kind of thought that you are talking to me is coming from a right place in your being. No. It is coming from a place where you have found yourself very weak in your heart. This is a reflection of the weakness of your heart, not the clarity and strength of your power of discrimination and discernment. Because your thought process is polluted by, contaminated by the outcome of this war. Not paying enough attention, while you are not paying enough attention, that the outcome of not taking full, role in the war will be far more worse than this bloody war. Many, many times that's what happens to us. When we get scared, when we get sad, when we get confused, when we see our own loved ones turning against us, when we see society being ruled by deceptive forces, we just become sad. We become despondent. In that state of despondency, still we think, still we try our best to do the right things, but the problem is this kind of despondent state pollutes the mind to the point that we can't make a right decision. All the options seem to be equally undesirable and painful. Finally, what happens? Quite often, I don't know. I give up. Then comes a tricky part of our own mind, that in order to console ourselves, we start giving a philosophical overtone to our this kind of behavior. Because we have read in almost every Bible of the world, almost every religious book tells us that the path of sannyasa, path of renunciation, is ultimately the direct cause of freedom from bondage. I just give up. Not we don't have the right frame of mind with us to really see that am I just giving up as a helpless fellow, resorting to inaction and inertia? Am I just simply digging our face into the sand just like ostrich and fooling myself that now after this everything will be just fine? Am I really trustfully surrendering to God, or is it just I'm just fooling myself? This situation comes in life. And that's what exactly here in verse 49, Bhagavad Gita, this is our topic begins today. That you listen to the call of your own soul, call of your own conscience. Respond to the call of your inner intelligence, buddhi. That is way to freedom. And this is where this verse 249 comes in. Durein hi avaram karma. Any action which is propelled by a confused mind which is suffering from its own weakness, such an action is source of bondage. Such an action is of inferior nature. Not taking an action is definitely very, very bad. No? But taking making a decision to act without proper clarity, that is also of inferior nature. But although it's not as inferior as when you are doing something good, when you stop doing something good, just because you are not inspired to do anything good. That's definitely, that kind of inertia is, that kind of inaction is definitely, of lowest grade thing that you can do to yourself. But committing yourself to act without enough understanding also compromises the quality. Refraining from performing actions is totally out of question. Discussion. Then comes the action. That's what here sutra, the verse 49 says, Durein hi havaram karma. Buddhi yogad. If our action is not in conformity with our inner intelligence, then such action, even though at its face value, it seems to have a great merit, still its merit is compromised. Because not everything about our action is in our hand. Performance of action is to some degree is in our control, in our hands, but not totally. we start our practice, sadhana. Right in the very beginning, right in the middle, or even before, let's say, if we started a practice, time-bound, let's say, 40-day-long practice, 10-day-long practice. We started with great intention, with great determination, everything is fine, we did it, and yet, right in the middle of practice, we ended up with cough and cold, for example, just as I have. This did not, it wasn't plan, part of my plan when I was deciding to do my practice. Okay. Similarly, my mother is sitting in India, she's very old. God forbid, right in the middle of my practice, which I decided to do this time-bound 20-day, 30-day, 10-day, 11-day long practice, right in the middle of that, suddenly I get emergency call. Come quickly, mother is in the hospital, perhaps it's her last phase. I have to rush. Okay. Anything can happen. There are lots of unforeseen and therefore unpredictable circumstances which might emerge, you know, during the course of my action, during the course of my sadhana practice. Therefore, making a decision to do a practice, making a decision to perform my action, making a decision to stick to my duties, that is in my hand. But I'll be able to really complete it. It's not totally in my hand. In part, it is in my hand. In part, it is in the hands of fate, providence, divine grace. So many circumstances together, no, enable us to complete the practice exactly the way we wanted, we had decided. Okay. Therefore, this kind of clarity has to be there. And it is this clarity that protects us from identifying ourselves as a weak fellow failure. One of the biggest problems in life is that each time we so-called fail, we identify ourselves with our failure. If we are low-grade fellow, then fearing similar fear will not start that work again. I'm done. Okay? But if we are relatively a so-called a person of higher grade, higher quality, higher grade fellow, then it's okay. Let's start all over again. But the problem is, when we failed first time, we gave too much importance to that outcome. We allowed our mind to brood on that process, on that outcome. We kept going back to the past again and again and again, not necessarily to learn the lesson, but to brood on that process. When we have clear, calm and tranquil mind, and if our power of discernment stands firm, then even when we are just about to make a mistake, we know that we are just about to make a mistake, but by that time we are in such a flow that we couldn't stop making mistake. So we got the lesson right away. Okay? And definitely, when we already made a mistake, And we see the result, then we can very clearly say, because of such and such, next time we should be very careful. Next time we should be more careful. And that's it, done. But if we did not have the right kind of understanding right in the very beginning, and thus we allowed ourselves to fool ourselves that yes, this is the plan, this is this, point number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the result is going to be this. Have confidence in yourself, but also in the back of your mind, tell yourself that you are still a human being. Even when great, great incarnations came to this world, they also struggled from human, from the circumstances which are common to all human beings. Before they reincarnated, before they descended here to this world, I'm talking about great souls, Krishna, Arjuna, Jesus Christ, who according to our spiritual history, they were great souls. They came to this world not due to their own karma or any problem. No, they didn't have such karmic consequences to discharge here. And yet, even the blessed, quote, blessed children of God, who at certain level is constantly embraced by the divine grace and the divine shaktis, even when they walk in flesh, they are under the influence of the forces which rule and govern and guide the functions of this flesh. If this is the case with such great ones, then I am definitely subject to those circumstances. With that kind of knowledge and understanding, when we start our practice or when we undertake any action, when we work hard to discharge our duties, then on one hand, we have great confidence in our work. We are enthusiastic, we are inspired. And yet, when undesirable circumstances sneak in, we do not hold ourselves a victim. Number one, we do not allow ourselves to go back to the same thing again and again and again. Oh, my childhood was like that. Oh, my uncle this. Oh, yeah. And somebody has written the books also that these things are, what can you do? These traumatic experiences leave such a powerful imprint in the mind. Bhagavad Gita is telling that, yes, this is true. But this is what human being is so special. We can heal. We can transcend. We can free ourselves. This privilege is very, very unique privilege to humans only. Exercise your privilege, Arjuna. How? Buddhi yogat dhananjaya. Next word in this verse 49. Buddhi yogat. By uniting your actions and impetus behind action with your buddhi, with your inner intelligence. Okay. Seek guidance from that buddhi. Buddhau saranam anvichya. Have desire, and not just simple desire, but intense desire to seek and find guidance from your own buddhi. And in case if there is any kind of veil over your buddhi, then just because you have such an intense desire to seek guidance from the buddhi, the divine grace will lift that veil and allow the light of that inner intelligence to illuminate the entire realm, entire landscape of your consciousness, and you will be able to see exactly who you are, what are you trying to do, and why are you trying to do, and whether or not You know, you should be holding yourself that responsible for the outcomes of your actions. Your inner intelligence will tell you. Therefore, O Arjuna, buddhau saranam anvichha. Take refuge in Buddha, in Buddhi. And tell yourself, kripanaha phalahetavaha. Miser and stingy are those, spiritually speaking, miser, stingy are those who set their mind on the fruit so tightly, so rigidly, so strictly, that when the course of actions is slightly altered and the fruits of actions are slightly different, they just go completely wild. How much you are stuck with the fruits of your action depends on when the fruits are not, fruits do not manifest exactly the way you desire, and how affected you are by that. That tells you how attached you are to the fruits of your action. And the more attached you are to the fruits of your actions, the more stingy, miser person you are. Because you will not be able to give credit. To so many other people, those who offered their help in so many subtle ways. Number one, how can I give credit to even my own mind? How can I give even credit to my own desire, my own intention, which itself is so dependent on divine will for its own guidance and nourishment? We are committed to do our best, and our commitment, equal amount of commitment, is to make sure that we remain in the view, in full view of our own conscience, inner intelligence. If that is not there, then here comes a big problem. Big problems is utter confusion that takes us to verse 7, I think, of chapter 2. Karpanya dosopahata swabhavah prichhami tvam dharma sammoodh cheta. Yachreya syam nishchitam bruhitan me shishyasteham sadhimam thvaprapannam. Karpanya, this stinginess, this is very technical term in our regular usage of the term stinginess or being miser refers to that somebody who is called penny pinching fellow. But penny pinching is not as serious problem as mind pinching. You know? We pinch our mind. We bite our own conscience because of this identification. You know? Where does it lead? Karpanya, this is one of the most serious to call contamination, mental contamination. What does it do? Swabhavah, upahata swabhavah. It just beats up, it makes bruises, scars on our essential nature. Our essential nature is something very lovely, no? Very clear, self-guided, full of discernment. In fact, Its essential nature of any living being distinguishes that living being from the rest of other living beings. So the rabbits have their essential nature, swabhava. Driven by their swabhava, essential nature, they eat, sleep, procreate, and live in a particular manner. Tiger has its essential nature. Snake has its essential nature. Cows and buffaloes have their essential nature. That's what make them behave the way they behave. That's what make them live the way they live. That's what makes them interact with others the way they interact. Similarly here, we also have our own essential nature. It's because of that essential nature, we behave the way we behave. But in general, what is that essential nature? Even though each of us, our essential nature differs from person to person, and yet there is something in common that we share, and that is our power of discrimination, understanding between right and wrong, and good and bad, and ability to decide that which side we want to be, which particular quality and capacity and characteristics and attributes we fostering, we should be reinforcing. It is totally, it's a decisive faculty. We deep down, we are equipped with very, very, very decisive faculty that tells us, make a decision, stick to your decision. And you have capacity to do so. It is by summoning that power, the decisive faculty, it is by summoning the power of that decisive faculty, we are able to awaken the forces of transformation within us. That is why, despite the fact that we know here in such and such areas of my life, I'm somewhat negative, I'm somewhat pessimistic, I'm somewhat very critical kind of fellow. And yet, I have capacity to change it. Therefore, upahata swabhavaha, we are human beings. We are amazing creatures which are combined, which combine all the right and wrong and pleasant and unpleasant. There is love and compassion in us. There is cruelty and violence in us. That's what we are. But the most important thing of our swabhava, essential nature, is power of discrimination and capacity to discern and decide and stick to it. That is where, from this essential nature of ours, comes forth the power of will and determination. That is, we are going to do it. We'll do it. But when we become stingy, when we become too focused on the result, fruit, our action, we identify ourselves with actions, that we are the one, I did it, better we stay out of, do not claim credit. For my action, I am the one who did it. Then what happens is, our essential nature gets damaged. That's when the Krishna, when he was caught in that middle of the battlefield, and when he was caught into the tumultuous streams of his own different emotions, then he realized, and when Krishna scolded him, Arjuna came back to his senses, and then that's when suddenly he realized, oh my God, yes, I'm really being carried away. Then he says, acknowledges in this particular verse 2:7, Karparane doshopahata swabhava, O Krishna. Now I am fully aware of my problem. And that is, I have been identifying myself with my actions, and I was claiming the fruits of my actions even before the fruits presented themselves. And because of that, upatha swabhavaha, my essential nature has been very, very badly damaged. Prichhami tvam dharma sammoodha cheta. And that has clouded, that clouded my mind regarding what is my dharma, what is the right thing to do. It is with that kind of mind, it, while drowning in such a state of mind, O Krishna, I am urging you, I am requesting you, what? Yachreya syan nishchitam rohitan me. I do not need too many options now anymore. Just simply remind me once again what is best for me. And that best must not be decided by how by the virtue of pleasant, but rather what's really good for me, good for everyone else. In what kind of, what decision contains the highest good in long run? Yachreya syan nishchitam bruhitan me. And please tell me decisively, no more wavering, no, anymore. Shishyasteham. I have been treating you as my friend. You have been treating me as your friend all these years. But today, I present myself as your student. Shishyasteham. I am your student. Shadhi. Guide me with discipline, with in an assertive way. Shadhi mam dva prapannam. Me, the one who is now fully surrendered to you. This is what actually we need in order to understand how to perform our actions, so that our actions not only don't bind us anymore, but rather if there is any bondage that we have accumulated from our past actions, how such bondages can also be finished, destroyed. So this is the verse 49. Dureṇa yavaram karma. That's again I'm repeating. Definitely inaction, which has been described earlier, inaction is totally out of question in terms of, you know, in the life of a human being. Humans are not designed to drown in inertia. No. They have power, privilege to decide and act. But action, which is definitely superior to inaction, is also of inferior nature if it is not guided by our swabhava, inner intelligence. Therefore, O Arjuna, Krishna is telling, buddhau saranam anmichya, desire to find guidance, protection and nourishment from your buddhi, your essential intelligence, essential nature. Kirpadaha phalhetavaha. Remind yourself again and again that it is only the spiritually stingy, miser people, out of ignorance, identify themselves with their actions and the fruits of their actions. That is a very important thing to remember in our life, in our sadhana. That see here, even during his own lifetime, Buddha had three phrases, which was like we do our prayer, Om Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, you know, that kind of prayer. Or Asato Ma Sadagamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, lead me from unreal to the real, from darkness to light, etc. So the prayer in Buddhism had been, even Buddha himself started, Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Just three phrases. Buddham Saranam Gacchami. I take refuge in Buddha. It means I seek guidance, protection and nourishment from Buddha. Buddha is the one whose buddhi is fully awakened and has no more veil over it. Such a person is called Buddha. The word buddhi and Buddha, they come from the same place. Buddha is one whose buddhi is intact. Let's put it this way. I seek guidance, protection and nourishment from my buddhi. It's very powerful. Otherwise, Buddha, who is constantly reminding us not to fall in the trap of cults, himself starts teaching about cults, that I take refuge in Buddha, meaning you people start worshipping me, that will go completely against his own teachings. So he's not talking about take refuge in Buddha, the person who was the, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha, the born as Prince Siddhartha. No. Take refuge, take, you know, find your protection and guidance and nourishment from buddhi, unfettered buddhi. And, of course, in order to understand what that means, interact with and learn from those who apparently have found their intact, unfettered buddhi. That's what teachers are all about. Then, dhammam saranam gacchami. As soon as you find protection and guidance and nourishment from that buddhi, then automatically you will come to know what is your dharma. And once you know it, then don't go back and forth. Oh, well, I don't know, I should be doing that. No, it doesn't. We are inspired one moment, and we revert to our old self. It happens in our life again and again, only because we have not really found our unfettered buddhi, and we have not found the guidance, protection and nourishment from that buddhi. Then thereafter comes a very amazing phrase, Sangham Saranam Gacchami. When we begin to live in the light of our inner conscience, and when we decide the course of our dharma while keeping so-called our decision in the full view of that inner conscience, then automatically we begin to see those who are like-minded people out there. So automatically we find those who are somewhat compatible to our ideology. Others found us, because our ideology, because all of us are almost at the same page. Therefore, a sangha, a community is created. And once the community is created, then the whole community starts feeding each other, nurturing each other, supporting each other. Therefore, that supportive community gives strength to our inner world, and what we find in our inner world, automatically we bring out in the external world, and thus the forces in our inner world become supportive of the forces outside, and the outside forces become supportive of the forces inside us. And that is how this process begins, and then never stops. Like, then it keeps gathering more and more momentum. No? And this way, so-called our good work, our sadhana, our practice becomes unstoppable. Buddha yukto jahati hai ubhe sukrit duskrite. Then it becomes very easy for us to hold on to or renounce the outcome of our good or relatively good or relatively bad actions and their outcomes. तस्मात् योगाय युज्यस्व योगः कर्मसु कौशलम्. दिस काइंड ऑफ परफॉर्मिंग आवर एक्शंस इन दिस पर्टिकुलर लाइट इज कॉल्ड योग. योगः कर्मसु कौशलम्, दैट इज व्हेन वी बिकम स्मार्ट स्किलफुल इन टर्म्स ऑफ परफॉर्मिंग आवर एक्शंस एंड रीपिंग द फ्रूट्स ऑफ एक्शंस. दैट वॉज वर्स 50. आई एम रशिंग, इट्स ओके. कर्मजम बुद्धि, एंड दिस इज हाउ गोज ऑन. आई एम जस्ट समराइजिंग. कर्मजम बुद्धि युक्ता ही फलम त्यक्त्वा मनीषिणः. दिस इज हाउ ग्रेट ग्रेट सोल्स इन द पास्ट दे वर एबल टू स्टे फ्री फ्रॉम द एक्शंस, from the effects of the actions as well as from their fruits. Janum bandha vinurumukta, that is how they are able to extricate themselves from the continuous cycle of birth and death. Padam gacchant anamayam, that is how they were able to reach that state of eternity and immortality. This is how yadate moha kalilam buddhir vyatitarishyati. O Arjuna, that is how you will be able to go beyond this state of confusion regarding what should I be doing, what should I not be doing, how should I be fighting, how should I be not fighting, how should I face, confront and conquer, and how should I just let go. It is not so easy unless we find ourselves in the full view of our inner intelligence. Tadagan tasi nirvedam, and only then, O Arjuna, you will be able to reach that state which is called nirveda. Another term for nirveda is vishoka, where you no longer suffer from what you have done, what you have not done, what you have desired and what you have not desired. All the consequences of the fruits, all the consequences of your previous actions are completely nullified in terms of their effect on you. Srotabhyasya srutasya cha. And it is only then sruti vipratipannaste yadastadasthasyate nischala. It is only then you will be able to read and comprehend even the authoritative scriptures. Otherwise, before that, you will remain a victim of others' interpretations and you will not be able to really understand what is the true intent of any of those scriptures. And that is how we can clearly see wonderful books are there, wonderful scriptures are there, the Bible is there, Bhagavad Gita is there, the Vedas and the Upanishads are there, and Yoga Sutra is there. So many wonderful books are there, scriptures are there, but we are more dependent on people's interpretation, and people's interpretations are influenced by their own quality of their own buddhi. And thus, while reading Bhagavad Gita, while reading the Yoga Sutra, while reading the Upanishads, we actually read and imbibe others' opinions rather than the scripture itself, and still remain in this state of doubt and confusion. Did I really understand this subject? Is it that's what really Bhagavad Gita says? Is it that's what Patanjali really meant? We are not very sure about it. Tadasthasyate nischala. Once you have found yourself in the full view of your own inner conscience, then everything becomes very stable. You know it. This is what scripture is telling. This is what Bhagavad Gita is telling. And in fact, it's not only that what is Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga Sutra, Bhagavad Gita is telling, but rather, this is exactly for me here. That, any of these scriptures are addressing, a general population. Each of us have our own mind, each of us have our own needs, and each of us have our own tools and means. Each of us have our own unique capacities to comprehend. And any of these great scriptures are meant for all of us. And that means, it is again, we need our own buddhi, and we need our own clear, calm and tranquil and stable mind in order to really see which particular portion of the scripture is currently applicable for me. The rest is not that there is something wrong in the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. There are many, many other principles Bhagavad Gita itself is going to tell us a little later. But the point is here, what is most important at this particular stage in my own personal development and evolution? Where and how should I start doing my own sadhana? And how the rest can be there somewhere in the back pantry? You know, this kind of understanding we gain. We gain this kind of understanding when we somehow begin to receive the guidance, protection, you know, and nurturance from our own inner intelligence. Tada samadhau achala buddhihi, that is when we'll be walking toward samadhi. And our own buddhi thereafter will begin to comply with the divine being, the Lord, the Almighty. How it happens, how do we know that our buddhi is really has become clear and stable, and we have started receiving guidance and nourishment and protection from our inner intelligence? That is the subject of our next verse, you know, of Bhagavad Gita. You know, it very clearly tells, it's a very clear sign and symptom how once we begin to receive that guidance, and that guidance is making us become more and more matured and more transformed human being, then automatically there is a very unique change that takes place in our speech and in our behaviors, the way we stand, the way we interact, then the way we sit, you know, and the way we manage the situations and circumstances in the external world, you know, and the way we start treating ourselves. Those unique signs and symptoms tell us that we are now on the right path, moving in the right direction. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you.